Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Stop throwing my country to the wind, wrote the aging, nearly blind Iranian poet Simin Bepahani after last June's elections and protests in Iran. Your faith, she wrote, has grown blind. Since the time of the Shah, Bepahani's poems have gracefully approached the mighty and dared to look them in the eye. This month, the embattled current regime in Tehran took her passport and made Iran's most celebrated poet a prisoner in her own country. This hour, On Point, the poetry and politics of First Lady of Iranian Poetry, Simin Bepahani, and the crackdown on her and many others. You can join the conversation, What is the threat to power in a poet, in this poet? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will be joined in a few minutes by Iranian scholar Hala Esfandiari, famous for her surviving a stint in solitary confinement in Tehran's Evin prison. But first, joining me from Charlottesville, Virginia, is Farzaneh Melani. She is a close friend of Bepahani and the main translator of her poems from Iran's Farsi into English. She's professor of studies in women and gender at the University of Virginia and author of Veils and Words, The Emerging Voice of Iranian Women Writers. Farzaneh Melani, thank you very much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here, Tom.
And with us from College Park, Maryland, we're joined by Ahmad Karimi Hakak. He, too, is a close personal friend of poet Simin Bepahani. He's a specialist in modern Persian literature and director of the Center for Persian Studies at the University of Maryland. Ahmad Karimi Hakak, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me, Tom.
I want to get, before we do anything else, just get some of her poetry, Bepahani's poetry, in our ears, if I may. There was here's just a little bit. This is a poem that she wrote for Neda Sultan. This is the young woman whose dying face in the protests last summer became a kind of symbol for Iran's pro-democracy protesters. This is Bepahani for Neda Sultan.
You are neither dead nor will you die. You will always remain alive. You have an eternal existence.
You are voice of the people of Iran.
You are the voice of the people of Iran.
Just a little bit of the voice of the now 82-year-old Bepahani talking about the young woman who died in protests after the much-disputed election in Iran last summer. Farzaneh Melani, you've translated Bepahani. You know her very well. I wish you'd begin to introduce us to her. For those who don't know this woman, now 82 and nearly blind, give us a sense of her background, her standing in Iranian poetry.
Sure, I will be delighted to do so, Tom. Simin Bepahani is our national poet. She is the most revered living poet in Iran today. She has reached the status of an icon, of a guru for the Iranian people inside and outside the country. For six decades, she has been writing exquisite poetry. She has been a voice of resistance, in fact, also the face of opposition to any form of injustice before the revolution and after the revolution. Simin Bepahani has never been a member of any political party. She has said it repeatedly, has not been involved in overthrowing any government. She has just always spoken truth to power.
Can you tell us what happened on March 8th at the airport in Tehran?
Sure. On March 8th, Ms. Behbahani was invited to go give a talk in France, in Paris, and to read a couple of her poems. She had her passport, and in fact, the last few years, she has left the country repeatedly to give poetry reading. As I said, she is undoubtedly the most popular Iranian poet alive. She was never stopped, and so this was the first time on March 8th that at the airport she was stopped. She was interrogated all night, and she was sent home without her passport with the instruction that she would need to go to the Revolutionary Court to retrieve her passport.
That sounds fairly threatening. Ahmad Karimi Hakak, why do you think this happened? She's 82 years old. She has only her peripheral vision remaining. I mean, we know poetry is powerful, but still, why would this regime take on such an icon of the arts of poetry in Iran?
That's an important question, Tom. Thank you for asking it. I think exquisite is really the main quality of her poetry that Farzaneh so eloquently mentioned. Besides that, it is the kind of poetry she writes that speaks to all classes and all or political orientations of Iranian people. Two very specific ways in which this poet, Simin Behbahani, has modernized Persian poetry. It makes her unique among the living poets and even among the generation, her generation, most of whom are now deceased. One is the way she relates the local to the universal. Her poetry, in that it seems as though she has learned from the greatest of the classical poets, Rumi and Hafiz, to combine the local and the universal in a kind of chemical combination that makes the two inseparable. Therefore, the iconic quality of her poetry that Farzaneh alluded to. The second one is she has made it new in a very unique way, whereas most of the poets of her generation and the previous generation have really tried to deal with forms of poetry and imagery of poetry. She has modernized the poetry in content and in the way it relates images to ideas. And therefore, you see in her poetry a camel that comes to represent the people. And this camel is being driven to a mirage, and therefore in the end you see that violent scene where the camel's teeth are in the neck of the camel rider. And so there are qualities like this, or a one-legged man who really comes to symbolize all veterans all over the world, possibly, but definitely in post-Iran-Iraq war Iran. So it's these qualities that give her poetry a very important quality that speaks to various classes of people.
And it may be exquisite, but it doesn't take long to begin to feel its political weight, the camel biting the neck of that rider. Or here, from we mentioned earlier that Stop Throwing My Country to the Wind. This is,
yes.
She read, I've got some of her reading on the phone. This is from Tehran last June, reading this poem, which she'd written in response to the government crackdown that the whole world saw on protesters. And you will hear it is pretty tough, even from this exquisite poet. This is her Behbahani reading in Farsi with English voiceover.
If the flames of anger rise any higher in this land, your name on your tombstone will be covered with dirt. You have become a babbling loudmouth, your insolent ranting something to joke about. The lies you have found, you have woven together. The rope you have crafted, you will find around your neck. Pride has swollen your head, your faith has grown blind. The elephant that falls will not rise. Stop this extravagance, this reckless throwing of my country to the wind. The grim-faced rising cloud will grovel at the swamp's feet. Stop this screaming, mayhem, and bloodshed. Stop doing what makes God's creatures mourn with tears. My curses will not be upon you as in their fulfillment. My enemy's afflictions also cause me pain. You may wish to have me burned or decide to stone me, but in your hand, match or stone will lose their power to harm me.
Will lose their power to harm me. They're the voice of Simin Behbahani on the phone from Tehran last June. That's courtesy of National Public Radio, and we're grateful for that. But Farzaneh, when I hear this, it's almost surprising she wasn't arrested earlier. You've become a babbling loudmouth. The rope you've crafted will find around your neck. This is an angry poet.
Well, Tom, you're absolutely correct. It is an angry poet. And it's not the first one she has written, and it's also not the last one she will write or she has written since then. You know, Tom, we all thought that Simin Behbahani was untouchable. We thought with the stature she has inside the country and outside the country, with the numerous international awards she's been granted, with the fact that never before in the six decades of her devotion to truth and to beauty, she has never sold her pen or her soul.
Now she's a prisoner in her own country. Please stand by. We're talking about the Iranian poet Simin Behbahani. Here's the Iranian music icon, Dariush. She put one of her poems, I Will Build You Again, to music. We'll come back with much more after a short break. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
دوباره می سازمت وطن اگرچه با خشت جان خیش ستون به سقف تو می زنم اگرچه با استخوان خیش.
We're talking this hour about the first lady of Iranian poetry, 82-year-old Simin Behbahani, and the crackdown on her and many others by the government in Tehran. On March 8th, she was stopped at the airport, passport taken, interrogated overnight, an 82-year-old, and told to come to court to get her passport back. Here, last June, as cities across Iran erupted in protest and crackdown, the poet spoke to NPR about her nickname, the Lioness of Iran, and also about her hopes for her country.
The Lioness of Iran is one of the nicknames that my people have given to me, and I love it that people think of me in this way. I would like to see an Iran that has open relations, an Iran that lives in peace and with friendship with the rest of the world, and an Iran that gets along with peoples of all kind across the world.
There's an aspiration, a vision from Behbahani, courtesy of NPR, speaking with them last summer. We're joined this hour by Farzaneh Melani. She is a translator of Behbahani's poems from Farsi into English, professor at the University of Virginia, joins us from Charlottesville, and from College Park, Maryland, Ahmad Karimi Hakak. He's also a close friend of the poet, a specialist in modern Persian literature. He's at the University of Maryland. We've got callers who want to join us already. Let's go to Saeed in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Saeed, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. First, I wanted to thank Farzaneh Melani, Durud Bar Shoma, for translating the works of Behbahani. That was my favorite Nowruz present to everyone I knew, including my children, who unfortunately...
The Persian New Year, yes.
My children, unfortunately, don't speak Farsi, and Farzaneh Melani's work, I gave them access to know and love the poetry of Behbahani the way that I do. And it should not surprise us at all that there would be a crackdown, an icon of Iranian culture, Mrs. Behbahani, as this government has conducted a ruthless attack on every aspect of Iranian cultural life, including calling the celebrations of Nowruz and Chorshanbe Suri anti-religious. Simin Behbahani, like Shirin Ebadi, Masih Ali Nejad, Farrokhrooy Parsa, all are faces of brave Iranian women who stand up to this tyrannic regime. The most vibrant, grassroots uprising of people asking for rights. And these are the faces of that. I applaud your work, and I applaud for their struggle is our struggle. The struggle for rights for women is our struggle in Iran for freedom.
Saeed in Green Bay, thank you very much. Farzaneh, compliments to you there from Saeed for your translation. And what do you make of his response? Is this widespread?
And Tom, if you would allow me to first mention the name of my dear colleague, who is my co-translator, without whom I would have never been able to do the translations the way they are. My colleague, Professor Kaveh Safa.
Yes.
He is my co-translator, and he should be credited with genuine love for the work of Simin Behbahani, and he is indeed himself a fantastic poet. I'm grateful for what Saeed said, and I totally concur with him. You know, Tom, for the last 160 years, Iranian women writers have been at the forefront of a peaceful, nonviolent, moderating, modernizing movement in Iran. Simin Behbahani is the granddaughter of many other women writers who have come before her. And we need to applaud them. We need to recognize them better. And unfortunately, because of the dearth of translation in the last few decades in my country of adoption, in the United States of America, we have not heard about these women writers. But I genuinely, as I said before, believe they have been at the forefront of a bloodless revolution that is shaking the very foundation of Iranian society.
We should read a little more for us, another that you've translated with your colleague. It's called Necklace, and it's talking about women. And as Behbahani, the poet, puts it, the necklace of curses and tears that they have come to wear. It tells us a lot. Could you read for us?
Sure. This is a poem about the Iran-Iraq war. It was not allowed to be published inside the country, so it was originally published outside. And as you would see, while there are no soldiers, no guns, and no ammunition in this poem, it is one of the most powerful poems about war. It's about a mother gone insane with the loss of her son. Anxious, agitated, sad, her face uncovered, her head unveiled, not afraid of arrest or policemen, oblivious to the order, cover, conceal. Her eyes, two grapes plucked from their cluster, squeezed by the times to fill 100 barrels with blood. Mad, really mad, a stranger to herself and others, oblivious to the world, beyond being awakened even by the deluge. A particle of dust adrift in the wind, without purpose or destination. Lost, speechless, bewildered, a corpse without a grave, carrying around her neck a necklace of curses and tears, a pair of boots tied together, belonging to a dead soldier. I asked her, "What does this mean?" She smiled. "It's my son, poor child, sitting on my shoulders. He hasn't taken off his boots yet."
Necklace, poem of Simin Behbahani, read there by her translator, Farnese Milani. Joined right now from Washington, and very happy to be so, Bahala Esfandiari, excuse me, She was arrested by Iranian authorities and held in solitary confinement for 105 days in 2007. She's director of the Middle East program at the Woodrow Wilson Center for Scholars and her native Iran, and noted journalist, deputy secretary general of the Women's Organization of Iran, among many others, author of My Prison, My Home, and Women and Iran's Islamic Revolution. Hala Esfandiari, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
So, for you, what does Simin Behbahani stand for, and what does what just happened with her being stopped, interrogated, her passport taken away, her freedom to travel being taken away? What does it tell us about what's going on in Iran?
I would like to join Farzaneh and Ahmad in saying that I grew up with the poetry of Simin and other women Iranian poetess. So for me, she was also an icon. She's the grand dame of contemporary Iranian Persian poetry. I met her in 2007 in Berlin at a meeting after I was released from jail and I had come back to the U.S. And we spent a lot of time talking about what my experience was and what it meant to be a prisoner and also involved in the women's movement. And I think what we should know was that Simin also espoused the aspiration of the Iranian women to pursue their access to equal right in the society, and she took part in March 2006 on the occasion of International Women's Day in demonstrations in Tehran, and was beaten up there. And there was an 80-year-old woman, a poetess, and everybody knew her, being beaten up by goons and by police. So she has been the face, I think, of the Iranian protest movement, alongside of writing about all these different social issues. What it means, I think, is that the government is not tolerating any kind of dissent, and also the fear they have of the women's movement. And allow me to just add an anecdote. When I was in prison, I mean, my interrogators were telling me that we can put up with any kind of protest, but not with when we have thousands of women coming out into the street and protesting. And I think they stopped her from leaving the country because they knew that this time when she's going to be out, I mean, there would be a huge a gathering of people coming to her poetry reading, and they really did not want to attract even more attention to what is going on inside Iran.
And so very politically alive today, and could have excited a big response outside Iran, even if that's not possible right now inside. She's spoken up many times, as you say, on women's rights. I've got some tape here of the poet speaking in Tehran, Hala, in 2007. This is an interview with NPR's Mike Schuster. And here she was condemning the rare but not illegal practice of stoning women for adultery. Here's Simin Behbahani.
In the last 28 years after the revolution in Iran, this has been repeated. And even once at the beginning of the revolution, we had a woman condemned to stoning to death. While they were stoning her, she would not die as she was resisting. At the end, one of the police or revolutionary guards got a piece of heavy cement and put on her head to kill her.
Simin Behbahani mincing no words there in 2007. Now she's forbidden to leave the country. Let's go to Glenn in Middletown, Connecticut. Glenn, you're on the air with our quite august panel today. Welcome.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well.
I'm driving through Middletown. If I were to stop someone and ask them to name an American poet, I don't know that I would get anyone beyond, to name anyone beyond Maya Angelou. What I want to know is, how does poetry stand in Iran as far as the common person goes? Do they know who we're talking about here? Have they read her work?
It's a great question, Glenn. Ahmad Karimi Hakak, can you answer?
Sure, I'd be happy to. It's a question that my students always ask, and I'm sure my colleagues are very familiar with that question. It's an amazing cultural uniqueness of Iran and the Persian world that poetry maintains its central role in the culture. It's not an elitist kind of art. And the Persian-speaking world together, and Iran in particular, have always, of course, over the centuries, been logocentric, which means a lot of words, a lot of works have been written, a lot of words have been spoken. That's why how we've got Rumi and Hafiz, for example. In modern times, this has continued, and especially with the modernists, they have made poetry relevant again, relevant to social issues. The kind of anger that Farzaneh mentioned in Simin Behbahani's would not have appeared to the masses of Iranians if it had not been articulated in such a magnificent way. So she is teaching everyone to express anger in poetry, make poetry of anger. And the fact that in the last 8 months or so since the June elections, the Iranian government has cracked down on someone, an icon, a cultural icon like Simin, it means that the government has now left all the boundaries of decorum and has positioned itself, unfortunately, against culture, not against political opposition, but against the culture itself.
Wow.
Against the culture itself. So imagine countercultural actions in any government would really mobilize the people, because this is a culture that people are very proud of. And Simin Behbahani is not just the poet. She is the central figure in Iranian culture today.
Let's hear from another Iranian just on that point. Ali is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Ali, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for taking our call. Me and my wife would like to sing a few lines of a poem by Simin that expresses why she is so popular and why the regime is so against her.
By all means. Yes, please, Ali.
Surely.
Tell us about what it's going to say in English so we have a little understanding as you sing.
Surely, surely. I'm going to explain it in details later on, but it says, you know, that we are going to make this country again, and we are going to do it with our body as a motor, and we are going to make a ceiling to the column to the ceiling of this country, and we are going to use our bone for doing so.
Ali, I've got 2 minutes. Go for it, my friend.
Surely, surely. دوباره می سازمت فتن اگرچه با خشت جان خیش ستون به سقف تو می زنم اگرچه با استخوان خیش دوباره می گویم از تو گل به میل نسل جوان خیش دوباره می شویم از تو خون به سیل عشق روان خیش اگرچه صد سال مرده ام به گور خود خواهم ایستاد که برکنم قلب اهرمن به نعره آنچنان خیش اگرچه پیرم ولی هنوز مجال تعلیم اگر بود جوانی آغاز می کنم کنار نوبابگان خیش.
Ali, bless you. I'm so sorry to interrupt, but we're coming up to a break right here. We can't thank you enough for delivering that. I think for our caller, Glenn, that's probably all the evidence you need of how well-known this is. Ali, and to your wife, thank you for that. That's quite something. Hale, what are you feeling as your fellow Iranians sing this Behbahani poem?
Actually, I was quite moved because I had the poem in front of me and I was going to refer to it. So my friend Ali took care of it.
I will build you again, even with my own body, essentially, the poem says. We've got to take a short break right here, and I'm sorry for it, but that's just the tyranny of the clock. We'll come right back. Hala Esfandiari, please stand by. And Ahmad Karimi Hakak, Farzaneh Milani, please stand by. We're talking about the great Iranian poet Behbahani. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the first lady of Iranian poetry, 82-year-old Semin Behbahani, and the crackdown on her and many others, artists, journalists, many others, by the government in Tehran. On March 8th, she was stopped at the airport in Tehran, passport taken away, ordered to Revolutionary Court if she wants it back, effectively a prisoner in her own country. Ahmad Karimi Hakak joins us. He's at the University of Maryland, specializes in modern Persian literature, and of course, that's Iran. Farzaneh Milani is with us, translator of Behbahani. She's at the University of Virginia. And Hala Esfandiari is here. She spent her own 105 days in 2007 in solitary confinement in Evin Prison, attracted worldwide attention at that time. She's director of the Middle East Program at the Woodrow Wilson Center for Scholars and joins us from Washington. Terry in Brewstertown, Tennessee. Terry, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hello.
Wow, the lioness of Iran has got the chickens in charge, running and clucking and quaking in fear, hasn't she?
Yes, some of it looks like it. You mean the regime in Tehran? Well, she's 82 and she's got their attention.
That's what I'm saying. They're afraid of a little old lady who's partially almost blind.
Mm-hmm. What does it say to you, Terry?
Well, just like Aung San Suu Kyi in Myanmar, that they're so afraid of the power of a woman exposing their hypocrisy and the weakness of their regime. It's just it floors me that they can't admit and go on and progress instead of trying to regress into their
Well, trying to protect their power anyway, and they're up against maybe a kind of powder keg right now. And Terry, I appreciate your insight there. Let me get
Tom.
One more. Oh, yes. Hale, is that you?
That's it's Farzaneh Milani.
Farzaneh, yes, please.
May I also add to this wonderful comment of our friend, words can be much stronger than swords. So, although Semin Behbahani has reached an exalted position in Iranian literature, and I also want to bring to your attention that I was very happy to see Secretary of State Hillary Clinton refer to her poetry, to Semin Behbahani's poetry, in her Nowruz message, and it is on the webpage of U.S. Department of State.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, to the best of my knowledge, this is the first time that an Iranian woman, rather than Rumi or Hafez or Saadi, are glorious male poets, are being quoted and referred to in a statement by one of our politicians in this country.
For Nowruz, the Persian New Year, for those who aren't familiar, which has just passed, which was just celebrated.
Yes, it was on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
This is Holly.
Yes, Holly. Sorry.
I just wanted to add something to what Terry said. And as I said earlier, really the regime is literally frightened of the power of women. There is a campaign going on in Iran since 2006 organized by women from different strata of society to collect 1 million signature and present it to parliament to give equal right to women. And Semin was very active in the campaign and was a supporter of the campaign. Yes, the regime is very frightened of the women of Iran. And what we saw after the June election was those tens of thousands of people who came out in the streets.
Yeah.
You saw women in Western clothes, and you also saw women from traditional strata of the society. So I think when it comes to the question of equal right, I mean, women basically are speaking more or less with one voice.
Hear from that time, June of last summer, this is an interview with an NPR producer, again, Semin Behbahani, offering, this is in the midst of the government crackdown on protesters, offering this message in a way to Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad.
I don't know how Mr. Ahmadinejad will react in the next 4 years. I hope he will react well. And if I was him, I would resign and I would ask for the people of Iran to vote for me again so that there could be confidence. But I doubt that this will happen.
Simin Behbahani in Tehran last summer. Ellen in New London, New Hampshire. You're on the air, Ellen.
Hi.
Hello.
This is just wonderful. And I'm so happy to learn of this poet. What struck me was the fact that I had emailed my grandson last night and told him I was so pleased that he was taking Irish Lit at his public high school. I'm pleased that the high school offers it. But I said, one thing you will remember is that poets, writers, have had to leave Ireland, and their word was just too strong.
The word,
too
indeed.
Too powerful. Mm. And that word, the poet's word, is witness to the ills of a society, perhaps the strongest witness.
And
an 82-year-old woman.
Yes.
Wow.
And tremendously powerful. Yes,
my
Ellen.
Daughter knew, not knew, but welcomed with some other people, Mrs. Fondieri, back to her gym when she returned.
That's great. That's a long way from a cell in Evan prison. That's
definitely
wonderful to know. Yeah. Ellen, thank you very much. You know, I want to hear more of the sound of this poetry. Ahmed, I wonder if you would read one for us. There's one, Gracefully She Approached, it's called, and I don't know, she's famous for bringing the very, very old traditional ghazal form of Persian poetry into the sort of modern vernacular and usage. Is this an example of that, Ahmad?
This is an absolutely great example of that, and, you know, the mesmerizing power of the meter of Persian poetry. She uses it in innovative ways in such a way as to make it both modern and link it with the traditional, so much so that you almost hear the rhythm of traffic, the rhythm of the din around her, the rhythm of all kinds of sounds previously thought to have to produce no rhythm. Mm. She has a wonderful ear in really grasping the rhythm of everyday life and everyday speech. In addition to that, and this poem is an example of that as well, she's an amazingly peaceful person.
Yeah.
We now are talking about the power of her will, the power of her words, the anger in her poetry. But I would like to return us, if I may, to the radical moderation that she has exercised all through her career as a poet. And by that, I really mean a radical moderation in the sense that she rejects all violence of every kind. She has a wonderful poet, and she's one of the few Iranian poets who wrote a poem against terrorism immediately after September 11. It's an amazing voice, a voice that has the freshness of a daring thinker who also dares to really face power structures of the country and present them with iconic images of what they may have destroyed or produced. And this poem is one example of that. It's called Gracefully She Approached. Gracefully she approached in a dress of bright blue silk with an olive branch in her hand and many tales of sorrows in her eyes. Running to her, I greeted her and took her hand in mine. Pulses could still be felt in her veins. Warm was still her body with life. But you are dead, mother, I said. Many years ago you died. Neither of embalmment she smelled, nor in a shroud was she wrapped. I gave a glance at the olive branch she held out in her hand, and said with a smile, "It is the sign of peace. Take it." I took it from her and said, "Yes, it is the sign of..." When my voice and peace were broken by the violent arrival of a horseman. He carried a dagger under his tunic, with which he shaped the olive branch into a rod, and looking at it, he said to himself, "Not too bad a cane for punishing the sinners." A real image of a hellish pain. Then, to hide the rod, he opened his saddlebag. In there, O God, I saw a dead dove with a string tied round its broken neck. My mother walked away with anger and sorrow. My eyes followed her. Like the mourners, she wore a dress of black silk.
Well, wonderfully, sure, she approached. Wonderful.
Thank you for that reading. I'm sure Farzaneh and Hale would agree with me that as eloquent as these translations are, they really do not reflect the entire spectrum of poetic art that goes into it. The artistry. She has brought creativity and artistry to her art in such a way that she really has made it new in a very radical way. Besides, of course, her longevity. She is the first woman poet in the Persian-speaking world that has lived a long life, and not only has lived a long life, and may she live decades more, but she has also gotten better and better by age, because she has passed through momentous events, and she has always been able to capture the spirit of those moments, not from this or that political perspective, but from the heart of the culture, from the streets, from the villages, from the water fountains, and so on and so forth of the society.
It's beautiful. We hear it. I want to try and get one more, but a call or two first. Sarok from Williamsburg, Virginia. Sarok, you're on the air.
Hello, I'm Farouk Namazi, and I'm listening to this wonderful, absolutely wonderful program, and it's beautiful. What I wanted to say was, one of the callers had asked whether the people of Iran understand poetry, like all strata in the streets, the common person. And I'd like to say, yes, they do. I mean, Iranian people speak in poetry. Their conversation is sprinkled with poetic verses, and from whichever strata of society they might be, whether you sit in a taxi, talk to a taxi driver, or you're shopping with the grocer, the butcher, the baker, anyone, they quote Firdausi, Saadi, Hafiz, Rumi. It's part of their lives. It's part of their conversation. I grew up, my grandmother was educated up to class 4. But when she spoke to us, when we came to the house or when we left, she spoke in poetry. She quoted Rumi or Hafiz or Saadi when she saw our faces, when we entered the house or we left the house.
So it's real. It's in the daily life. And we hear our time is so short, but Farouk, I'm very glad for your call. Farzaneh, I wish you could read us one more. I hope we have time. It's called Wine of Light. Can you read for us? We've only got a few minutes here.
Sure. I'll be delighted to do so. The stars have closed their eyes. Come. The wine of light flows through the veins of the night. Come. I have poured so many tears waiting in the night's lap that twilight has blossomed and the morning has bloomed. Come. In my mind's sky, your memory etches lines of gold like a shooting star. Come. I've sat so long with the night, telling my tale of woe, that the night and I have turned pale with sorrow. Come. If you're waiting to see me again when I die, understand, this is the time. Come. If I hear anyone's footsteps, I imagine they're yours. With all this beating, my heart is bursting out of my breast. Come. You didn't come when the sky was full of stars like grapes. Now that dawn has picked them one by one, come. You are the hope in the heart of Simin, the brokenhearted. Put an end to my misery. Come.
Wine of Light from Simin Behbahani. Hala Esfandiari, what kind of end to this story do you anticipate? Her passport's taken. She's told to go to the Revolutionary Court if she wants it back. Farzaneh was saying that many people thought Behbahani was untouchable, but apparently she's not. Where does this go?
I believe that they will give her passport, but they may not let her leave the country for a while, and once this noise dies down, and then she would be free again. This is a very high price they are paying, and I don't think that at the end it would be worth their while. But I think we abroad should continue to make a lot of noise and to protest this deed of the regime.
Farzaneh, what are her spirits? Do you know? You've spoken with her. We've just got a minute. How is she?
I've spoken to her three times since that event. She is Simin Behbahani. There is a reason why they call her the lioness of Iran. She is in high spirit. In fact, she's the one telling me to be strong, that all is going to be well, that she has done nothing but speak truth to power, and that for as long as she is alive, she's going to continue to do so. Well, may her message be carried around the globe.
Her lines once more gracefully she approached in a dress of bright blue silk with an olive branch in her hand and many tales of sorrow in her eyes. The poetry in this hour of Simin Behbahani, and we're so grateful to each of you for helping us either hear it for the first time or come to learn of it. Ahmad Karimi Hakak at the University of Maryland, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
And Hala Esfandiari, it's really great to hear from you, and thank you for your insights on the poet and on Iran today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Farzaneh Milani, translator extraordinaire here. Look, her book is A Cup of Sin, Selected Poems of Simin Behbahani at the University of Virginia. We're very grateful for all your work and your co-translator's work and your time with us today. Thank you for joining us.
It was a pleasure to be with you.
Listeners, you can read a couple of poems from Behbahani at our website, onpointradio.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.